Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
Life isn't really much fun when we're afraid. And I think that we have a lot more fear in our day-to-day lives than we ever are willing to acknowledge. Because part of the process of fear working in us is the promise that it presents to us through a new purpose or a new plan that will escape the fear. But if we're honest, and I must stress this right at the beginning of our meeting, and you should deliberately, and I when I'm talking, boy, it's just so nice if I say, yes, what do you think? You know, if you actually, you know, like breathe and move and let me know that we're talking. I mean, I know I'm sitting up here and I'm like on this little pedestal and all that business, but we are here, are we not? To whatever degree it is that has brought us here, because we recognize that something isn't in line, something isn't right still. And if we start from the premise that everything's right and I'm just trying to reach sainthood and that's why I'm here, we're never going to get anywhere together. How many of you think you're trying to reach sainthood? See, you'll say no. You'll say no. But the minute I say something that doesn't agree with your saintliness, you're going to get upset. And I am going to say things that you're not going to agree with. It's pretty much in the mix of things. And that's why I say if each of us, I do it while I talk. I try to do it 24 hours a day. If we're just honest about ourselves, if we're willing to see ourselves as we are, without letting all of this hubbub of thought and feeling get into it to try to convince us that what we're thinking is right or someone else's thinking is wrong, the whole thing is evident in us. Then we don't need teachers and gurus and all the highfalutins. We don't need that, because life has set it up for each and every one of us, and in a very unique way. I want to put that into the talk. In a very unique way, because each individual is a rather unique combination of certain elements, certain essences. That each and every one of us has everything we need right this very moment to fulfill the purpose of our being. But our present mindset doesn't understand the fulfillment of the purpose of our being in the present moment. It only understands the fulfillment of the purpose of our being in a time to come. And because of that and all the baggage that comes with it, we carry with ourselves a host of things that cause us to live in fear, but that we always dismiss because the fear is necessary to get to a point where I'll be fearless. I'll give you a minute to think about it. Yes or no? Yes. So I look at this in a different way, maybe, than some of you. And that I think the question has to be not how do I find more power, not how do I become a better human being, not how do I find ways to impress people or collect more knowledge about spiritual things. But rather, I approach it, and I'm going to approach what we're going to do today, which is about learning to let go and live in the now, which is just a phrase. It's just an idea. You have to come up, if you ever, any of you are authors, you have to come up with a good title. Because you can't really title a book something like, "Wake up, man, something's wrong with you." I've tried it, and you don't sell anything. Rather than look for a way to find something that we can get our hands on that lends us power, that always has to do with a time outside of ourselves and a purpose that is never really in our reach because it exceeds it the moment we get it, instead we begin to become interested in what it is that makes us powerless as we're sitting here. What is it that causes me to be afraid of the way a person looks at me? How many of you know that about yourself? You should, let's get this out in the open. I know things about you that I'm going to talk about that you're going to say, that's not true. And if you say that's not true, that's more proof that it is true. We do. Wherever we go, we're like one of those little robotic things. And anywhere it looks like we're going to bump into something, we go in another direction. And maybe some of us have gotten to the point where we don't do that anymore because we're going to act like we're not afraid. Then you have an arrogant human being, and an arrogant human being is a frightened human being. And if you want to know what an arrogant human being is, just from time to time, catch yourself, with all due respect, catch yourself. This is not you imperative yet, by the way. Just catch yourself assuming a posture. Have you ever met somebody? And they don't change. You laugh and what happens, by the way, inside of you when someone's like that? Be honest. Uh-oh. This must be a person of significance. Because look, they must know something. And they're just afraid. I want you, this is just a sidebar. This is one of these little extras. I want you to know that when you see an angry person, you're looking at a frightened person. When you see an angry person, you are looking at a frightened person. An anger that they seem to evidence as a way of being in control of their lives is the antithesis of that, because they're controlled by their negative state. And the way you can know the truth of that without having to walk around thinking to yourself, whenever you see, okay, the anger, he's afraid, instead of having to think about it, all you have to do one day is catch yourself being angry. See yourself in a state of anger and recognize the reason the anger is there is because something has come along that you think needs to be protected. Something has shaken the ground that you take yourself from, and when it does, I've got to hold it together. And anger is one of the ways in which we avoid seeing that what we're holding on to isn't doing anything for us. But let me tell you a story to exemplify a certain idea, and then we're going to go into the principles behind it. So take a deep breath. There was once a school for higher learning, and it was a true school for higher learning. It wasn't a school where a person went and acquired all kinds of knowledge by which, incidentally, one often winds up being more stressed and afraid, because then you're always trying to think about what you have to know in order to be free. And it doesn't work like that. So this was a very different school, and it was a pretty simple school. And the reason it was simple is because the teacher of the school understood that the only way that people ever learned the lessons was by actually going through them, not thinking about them, but discovering for themselves through their actual lives what was active and what wasn't, where there was power and where there wasn't power, and all of the things that were connected with the discovery of oneself, because in the end, it all comes down to oneself. Now, the school, after a certain amount of understanding, and I want to stress this just a tiny bit, we do need new knowledge. There's no question about it. We'll examine it much more deeply after the story. We need new knowledge because we need a new way to be able to look at our lives. And while we don't need knowledge to be able to see things anew, we do need to understand the need to see things anew. And that's where it comes. Our planet is not exactly high on the evolutionary scale, in case that isn't clear to you yet. And it's not because of your neighbor. And that is you imperative. So here's this school for higher learning, and eventually after the students have gained a little bit of knowledge, the teacher says, okay, here's the task. You know that where we are, this part of the world, and I'm speaking of this part of ourselves, that at present this school is situated where we want to move from where we are through a valley over to what we'll call the kingdom of the light side, something like that, meaning something that doesn't have fear in it, something without things to obscure the truth, what is right. But to get from where we are over to the valley of the light side, you have to go through the valley of the vicious attackers. And, of course, then several students left the school because, I don't want to monkey with stuff like that. I just want to be enlightened. I don't want to know about anything that's going to cause me a problem. I want to get right to the promise. But those students that remained said, okay, what do we have to do? He said, nothing. Just go. You go from here. You go down the valley. It's dark. There's attackers down there. You go through the valley. You get up to the light side. It's done deal. Well, sounds good. And some of the students came back. And each student, accordingly, packed their backpack with the things that they needed in order to make the journey. Well, suffice it to say that each student went down one side and got into the valley, and Each was picked up by something, you know, whirled around, thumped a few times on the ground, thrown against a few sides of a mountain back and forth, and then staggered back to the school, all beat up because they'd been attacked completely. And not one of the students got through the valley without being attacked. Now, let me break into my own story for a second, because this isn't complicated. What does it mean to be attacked? We're not talking about a mugger. But have you ever been mugged when you're in your bed by yourself? Go like this. Yes, I have. Yes, I have. I've been having my coffee and you know, like that commercial, the MasterCard, where the hordes come running through. And I was carried away, dropped on a boat, set afire, and set out to sea. And I was still sleeping. We get attacked. We get attacked. Certain kinds of thoughts and feelings, they make their way into our lives. What he did 22 years ago. I hit that many of you with the first one? Forget it, I'm done with the talk. My parents that never said they were proud of me, that I'm still trying to prove that I'm worthwhile, and they've been dead for 40 years. That school teacher that used to thump me on the head with a ruler. You too? How about this? I'm never going to be what I'm supposed to be. I'm not going to make it. I'm just not going to become what it was that I'd hoped to become in this life. Isn't that an attack? It is an attack.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's guyfinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
Any time the human being is flooded with negative emotions or negative thoughts that are produced by the entrance into themselves of something that they are considering themselves through, they have been attacked. And we consider ourselves through the thoughts that as they produce the problem for us, then say, follow me and I'll show you a new plan where you'll be free. And we never find that freedom because the thing that's promising it to us is the thing that's punishing us, but we don't see it because we're not present to ourselves. So when I talk about the school, this valley of the attackers, I want you to understand I'm not talking about some school that doesn't relate to being on planet Earth. We're in that school. And thank God that some of us have decided that we want to become a different order of human being who no longer want to participate in the whole ridiculous nonsense that has become the lifestyle of this planet. So all the students, they make their attempts, they come back. Now good students, and I'm trusting that we're all good students of the path, of the higher way, they think to themselves, well, now I know what I did wrong. How many of you know now what I did wrong? I've been saying that for 50 years. And they pack their backpack again, and they go back down to the valley, and here it comes, whomp, whomp, bang, bang, boom, boom. And this happens a bunch of times, doesn't it? Now, at some point, you would think that one of the students would think to himself or herself, what's going on? But then, because we have only a limit to time to gather together, we have to cut sort of the end of the story. And then the teacher says one day, listen, I have to run over to the Valley of the Light side and pick something up. And I'll be back in about 3 hours. And when I get back, you'll understand a little bit more about why you didn't make it across the valley. And they're thinking to themselves, well, he's going to bring something back with himself. maybe some special herb or a flower or an incense or a gong or a crystal or what, some carrot juice. He's going to bring something that makes it possible to get through the Valley of the Tackers. So they watch, and the teacher just goes right on down the hill, across the Valley of the Tackers. Not one thing attacks the teacher. Up the other side, it's gone for a minute. Come back down the hill, across the Valley of the Tackers. Nothing attacks the teacher. Back up this side, and he walks in. Now, let's just pretend that that actually happens. You and I as students, how do we feel about that teacher? And don't you dare say, oh, he's great. We're angry. What does he know? What does that man, what does that woman know that I don't know that allows him, to make the analogy complete, to go through life without being afraid and being attacked by something? Because, look, isn't that it in the end? We say to ourselves we want all of the things that we want, but isn't what we really want is simply to have a life that doesn't have fear in it, so we're not a plague and a pox to every person we meet trying to get something from them? Not to mention the pillaging of the planet that takes place because the nature that wants what it wants can't be satisfied, which is the birth of greed. So finally, when the students simmer down, one of them says to the teacher, I've learned enough now to understand certain things, he said. And this was in front of the group of the students. He said, and I understand that really there's nothing that you can do to us. There's nothing you can really tell us per se about how to make it through this Valley of the Attackers, how to make it through life as an innocent human being, someone who doesn't hurt himself or someone else, and who doesn't get hurt unconsciously. But can you tell us how it is that you were able to do that? And the teacher said yes, and this is the payoff to the story. The teacher said yes. You see, I never get attacked because I never carry anything with me that needs to be defended. I'll say it one more time. I never get attacked because I never carry anything with me that needs to be defended. Do you understand you can't get attacked? There's no such thing as an attack without something that's trying to defend itself. Do you understand that? And you say, well, wait a minute, no. I'm not talking about, God help us, the people who have been so relegated to a ruinous existence that the only thing they know to do is to hurt others. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the interior attack. I'm talking about, in a broader sense, how it seems to us often, if we're willing to admit it, that life comes out of nowhere and slaps us down. How many of you ever had life come out of nowhere and slap you down? Well, life has no power to slap us down. Telling you, it's a fact. Real life is an uplifting force. It's an intelligent movement. It's a beneficent power, real life. It has in it all of the qualities that we're going to talk about and have been talking about, but its function, its purpose in our lives is to perfect us, not to punish us. So the punishment doesn't come from life itself. The punishment comes from what it is that you and I are carrying with us, that we carry because we believe there's a necessity for it. Now, let's outline some of them because we can, and I know we talked about this. How many of you carry around old hurts? Raise your hands. Now, actually, if you just want to hold your hands in the air for a few minutes while I run through this list, it won't hurt. Have you ever noticed that? Like, for instance, take an old hurt. What do you feel towards someone who doesn't respect your old hurt? You want to hurt them. Yeah, you do. Look, how about this? For carrying around something that attracts an attack, I demand to be respected. Where in God's earth did a human being get the idea that they can demand respect from anyone for any reason? Where did that come from? You know, you couldn't have timed that better. Because we're going to use your mother now. But this won't be you imperative, okay? That's right. Now, mother meaning our collective past. And by our collective past, I mean that, in a manner of speaking, it's not inaccurate to say it, that we were not only born in a storm, which isn't a bad thing in itself, but we were born in a race that was already going on. And the race that we were born in that was already going on was the race that began probably, I'm not going to pick a time. It's not my forte to look at life in terms of a spiritual history of it. But sometime probably around the turn of the century, when the idea became more important that a person's worth and the value of the character of a person was more determined by their possessions and their powers than it was by the kind of human being they were. And it's been a very kind of dark Genesis and an unseen Genesis, because it throughout the history of ourselves, which, by the way, and I always put this in, we can't separate ourselves from it. You know, if you find, sorry, sometimes I see pictures in my mind and they just tickle me to death. Well, here's someone and they're judging this, the world, which we do. Look at those idiots. Racing around like they're racing around after the things they're after. And then one day, right in the middle of all that, you look and you're holding a baton in your hand because you took the baton and you never knew it. How many of you know what I'm talking about? I'm not talking about back to baton. I'm talking about in the race where they hand off that thing. A life was handed off to us. It's what it means essentially to be spiritually asleep. Because a person can't begin to awake to the actuality, the factuality of what it means to be a human being in the present moment, in relationship with life, as long as their life is predicated upon pursuing the purposes that were sown into us by our parents and their parents before us. It's impossible. We have accepted a set of values as being the inherent goodness of life when we can see all around us, but this is how we get by it. Others shouldn't have or can't have the things that we want. I'm going to get mine. And unfortunately, invisible to us as that's going on, is that here we are as individuals, and we have, and getting to the point of this, that we've become individuals whose lives are defined by the purposes we follow. And most of us don't think about the purpose of our lives because it was handed to us. I'll give you some purposes that were handed to us. You grow up. You get married. But you better get a good job before you do it. Then you have children. Then as you have children, you really struggle to make lots more money because you're going to have to send them to the best possible schools that exist. And the reason you're going to send them to the best possible schools they exist is so that they can find the happiness that you didn't find. Because they're going to have the same purposes, only they're going to do better fulfilling them. And if you look at it closely, what you see is that we are defined, each and every one of us, to some degree, by how we think others see us and how we see ourselves according to having measured up to a world that gave us what it meant to be a valuable human being. Yes or no? Can you see it so? How many people do you meet who don't like themselves, who actually become, take a wrong turn in the truest sense of the word because it occurs to them at some point that they are never going to be anyone of worth. They're never going to have anything worthwhile about themselves because they don't have the mind that enter into a business stream or whatever it is that a person moves along their life by. So what we have, if we look closely, is that our lives, the way in which, and this is, I'll try to slow down a little bit, the way in which I know myself, my sense of self moment to moment, how I feel about myself, is a derivative of how I measure myself against the standards I was given as what it means to be a satisfactory human being. Which means even if I achieve it, I'm sure in this room, there's probably 60 people in this room. I know that in this room there are men and women who have achieved a certain order of life. I know it. I talk to them all the time. Truth is, I don't usually throw this into a talk, but I was born and raised with the sons and daughters of the world's greatest celebrities. My best friends were the Dino Martins and the Desi Arnaz Juniors. I ran with Liza Minnelli. I mean, my friends, kids I played with, and every family, without an exception, was a wreck. An absolute dysfunctional wreck. angry, frightened human beings who, because they couldn't understand that they had been given the same baton, the same purpose to run for, that now they're going to hand the same values to their children and hope that their children do better with something, and now to the whole point of it, that doesn't work.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit GuyFinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit GuyFinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
Now, how many of you know the expression, throwing the baby out with the bathwater? My wife tells me, never use that expression. It's a bad picture, she says. And I agree with her. Except that what I'm working at here is that I'm not saying not to be an excellent human being. I'm not saying not to strive to be the very best human being you can be. But there's a difference between a human being who loves something and who strives for the excellence that's born in participating in an active passion versus a human being whose passion is to become someone through something. Because then if I set out to become someone through something, then my whole sense of self is consistently dependent upon that which I thought would make me a free, happy person. And you can't be a free, happy person if you're dependent upon anything. It's impossible. Because the minute that which you're dependent upon, whether it's a person, a place, or, and in the long run, it's always an idea. Let me get this in. In the long run, all we are really dependent upon is not the things that our mind defines, but the ideas that we have in our minds about those things, content rich, that each time we think about them relative to ourselves, we think, I'm pretty good, I've made it. And then this thing outside changes, and it changes, your whole world starts to go, how many of you know this? Your whole world starts to go through this rocky thing because you're attacked. How come life changed? Didn't anybody tell it? It's only supposed to change when I say change. And change only in the direction I want it to. Now, is that lunatic or not? See, at some point I always call everyone I talk to a lunatic. We're lunatics because we believe it's possible to approach freedom through dependency. And when we understand that the dependency we have isn't upon anything that we have any control over at all. I mean, who has control over the thing that's going to happen 2 seconds from now? Do you? I don't even know what I'm going to say. That's a fact. We're just here. But if you look at our lives, everything about them knows how everything's supposed to go. And the reason we know how it's supposed to go is because we have these expectations of things staying in place so that we can stay in place. And I guess what I'm trying to root to here is that where is the intelligence in claiming anything at all? And again, you must be able to separate in your mind. I'm not talking about the idea that, look, I need a place to live. I need clean clothes. I want healthy food for my body. I want to supply those that I love with that which they need. But there's an immense difference between measuring the worth of myself by people applauding me because of what I provide for them, as opposed to giving them the right principles that one's life is not determined by their possessions or their powers, but whether or not they possess their own person. Because in the end, that's the whole thing. And I don't need any... I mean, think, just try to see the contradiction in it. How did I get to a point where where my real longing is, is there anybody who doesn't think this? After, how many of you think to yourself, I'm going to do something so stupid now. I'm going to make the biggest possible fool of myself that I can. No one thinks like that, do they? But come on. Push come to shove. That's what's going to happen. I say, I never want to cause another person pain. I never want to cause another person pain. I said the cruelest thing. I didn't even know I was saying it. No one says that that's what they wish to do. No one consciously hurts another human being. Consciously, no one. But we do it all the time. And then one day, if God willing, a person says, you know what? I want more than I want all of the things that I think will give me the power. Because what we call power is the ability to isolate and insulate ourselves from conditions that we think are going to attack us. So all we really do is separate ourselves further and further and further out from life, destroying the possibility of any fruition of a relationship, with the idea that when I get it all in place, I'll blossom. So I want to be my own person. I mean, isn't that simple? I want, when I look at this lady, I want not to be a force of aggression of any kind at all. I want, when I look at this man, to be able to feel him instead of want something from him. I want to be able to talk to people, and if I feel in it, because don't you notice, you know, you start talking to people and it isn't long before you're attacked. Have you noticed that? Even with friends it happens. You know, you go out and you have a cocktail with somebody and the next thing you go, bang, like that. Because you start talking about stuff, and here you've got what you think are two, you know, fairly sophisticated people sitting there, and you've got two big rams butting their heads into each other because each one is threatening the sense of the other with their ideas. That makes no sense if you look at it. So what we have to do is understand what's underneath that. What is it that causes us to be as we are like that? And what it boils down to is that there's something in us that only knows itself by going around and claiming things, in essence. And by claiming things, I'm talking about something as simple as coming up with how many of you know that when life doesn't work out, most of our answers are always just find a new way to define ourselves. You know, like, this didn't work. Yeah, he was an idiot, but I may have been, you know, I may have been partially in it, so I'm just going to redefine myself, and I'll redefine everyone that I'm going to meet. And our answer is to continue to redefine life when it shows us that it doesn't work. Which, as a great man that I knew and loved once said, he said, it's like a person taking an arrow, drawing back the bow, letting the arrow fly, and then wherever it lands, drawing the bullseye around it. That's what we do. Because we can endlessly explain and rationalize and justify everything so that we never see that wherever we go, we carry with us something that winds up being threatened. Now, let's talk about solution a little bit. Let's talk about what's involved and what we need to do and understand as human beings. And we're going to use a couple different ideas and phrases, so you work with me to see it as I'm explaining it as best I can, as you can. When you look out in nature, and we are lucky to live, I think we're lucky to live in the Northwest. As much as it's, you know, going through what it's going through, this is such a beautiful place to live. And one of the reasons that it's so beautiful is because we're seeing all the time nature. And nature, if we look at it, she has so much to teach us. And it's a whole other talk to get into this idea of what's happened to us as being the users of this life instead of being participants in it. But in the long run, it boils down to the same thing. That when you look out at life, you will not see any form of life in nature at all that keeps anything for itself. I'm asking you, you look at it. You know, let's say a big, big, beautiful tree. A tree doesn't keep anything for itself. In comes this extraordinary radiant energy, pours into the tree, into this gateway, and then this living principle that's embodied in this marvelous form uses that energy to transform all of the elements that are drawn up through the earth. And every single thing that the tree takes, as soon as it takes it, it gives it back in another form. That's what nature does. Nature is this extraordinary transformational And I'm not going to use the word machine because it's not a machine. It's an extraordinary intelligence that's continually transforming higher forces and lower forces, different kinds of energies, for the purpose of not only the creature that does the transformation, but for all the creatures connected to the web of life that that tree or whatever is in. It's all serving something. It's all serving something. It keeps nothing. It gives everything back. Now, there's only one exception to the rule when it comes to this. How many of you are ahead of me? We want to keep everything. And the only things we give is when we can get more of things to keep, in essence. Now, there are times when we first fall in love, as rare as they may be, where we're pretty darn willing to give. But one of the reasons that we're so willing to give at that moment is because we're actually experiencing one of the invitations that's in love, which is the ability to understand ourselves anew. Because by giving ourselves to another human being, as it were, we're able to realize and experience ourselves in a way we didn't know ourselves prior to giving ourselves in the way we do. So there's an exchange that takes place. And that's, I think, you know, in a way we could look at the idea of love between human beings when it's there at that order, even sometimes just at the simplest physical level. But if we examine it more closely, which we have to do, we start to see that here is this extraordinary process by which everything in life lives under a certain set of principles that has to do with an inflow and an outflow, and that there's a transformation that takes place between what comes in and what goes out, and that by and large, human beings have found a way to become a stagnant pond. Because that's what look, what gets attacked is our ponds. I know that sounds crazy, doesn't it? I thought, don't say that. Our little lakes. That's not any better, is it? Our compounds with a lake. You dream your dream, I'll dream mine. That's what gets attacked. What gets attacked is what I claim as my own and try to keep that defines me. That's what gets attacked. Look at it for yourself. I'm this kind of human being. What does that mean? Well, I'm, you know, I've done this, and I've got letters after my name. Yeah, my mind said O-S-C-A-R, Bologna, was an Oscar. I got letters. I'm someone of significance. You know, is someone of significance someone who's touchy about their name, or is someone of significance someone who understands that they're more than their name? You can ask 1,000 questions, and you have to in the end. Because you need to start asking yourself what it is that makes me the way I am. What's happening? Where it is that there is something in me that no matter what happens, takes it, builds something out of it, and then puts it aside. And there's no limit to that. Have you ever, how many of you ever built a case against somebody? Raise your hands. No, please, I want you to think about this. Is it fun to resent? I mean, let's try to find one good thing about despising someone. You can't. But this same nature that I'm talking about, it'll maybe even at the break, you'll be talking to someone and someone will say something and you'll disagree and you'll spend, this is possible, don't you dare say it's not, you could spend the next 22 years going back over the conversation where you could have said something smarter, but you didn't.
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks 4 times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GuyFinley.org.
Now, can you revisit what I call the scene of the crime without experiencing the pain in it? You can't. And yet, I've seen this 1,000 times. You say to someone, look, you don't have to go there. Stay out of my life. As though there's something of value in revisiting the past. Let me throw this in. There is no value None. None in revisiting the past. None. None. We learn now or we don't learn. That's just the fact. I know you can find all kinds of heretics telling you, never forget all this, then I'll probably get blasted by this when this talk is over, which is, by the way, the proof of what I'm saying. You say you carry a hurt. Tell me the value of carrying a hurt. You can't. It's undefensible. Indefensible? Can't be defended. I struggle till I get it, don't I? Can't be defended. But we do it. Why? Because we don't know we're carrying it. And then by the time it gets stirred in us, by the time someone says something that gives us that feeling of being affronted, how about this for just something nice? What would it be like to go through life and no matter what happened to you, you never took affront? Never took affront. And do you know why? Because you began to realize in that moment, and this is what we've been leading up to, you began to realize that really, that the whole idea of what I'm carrying around with me, I know, hey, we're packed. By the way, raise your hand. We're packed. We're packed. And we will usually find people and societies and groups that support the pressure of our own package. Meaning that we want to find ways in which we can find those who agree with our right to be angry. See, I'm not making this up. I really don't understand it. And you say, well, anger is the instrument of change. No, anger is not the instrument of change. Anger is the instrument of resisting something that took place in the past. And whatever we resist that took place in the past, we bring forward into the future, into the present, which seeds it into our future. Which is why nothing changes. People say we learn from experience. How many of you are willing to say, I know now I haven't learned from experience? Because we haven't. Don't say, I'm, because I have a friend of mine, he always tells me, I'm a lot better off than I used to be. Well, please explain to me what that means. I only set a third of myself on fire now. That's stupid, isn't it? Come on, this is so good. And you know what? Good for you, because I've been in front of groups of people and talked to them, and I'll say the things I'm saying, not the same things, but I'll talk about these things, and they will set themselves on fire in front of me. You really only can laugh when you can see yourself. And by the way, the more you see yourself, the more fun you have in life, because the less there is to protect, because who protects an idiot? Yeah, that's it. And that's exactly right. And there's something in us that before we even know it's happened, we got our sword and our shield, our backpack is loaded with stuff that is going to get raided by the hordes of who knows what, and then we blame the world. So here's what we've been leading to. We must learn what it means personally and as deeply as possible, which every moment of our lives is gives us the chance to do it. What it means, the difference between trying to be a keeper of what life has, in quotes, given us, keeping things, as opposed to being a conveyor of things. The difference between a life of keeping and a life of conveying. Now, let me explain to you. We spent most of the time talking about what happens to us because we become keepers of these ideals and images and ideas about ourselves. And we know that whatever we keep, as a rule, means that I'm always reflecting upon it. I always think that the thing that I think about myself, that I get the sense of myself from, is exactly the same thing as who I am. So when anything in life threatens this image, I get angry. And then I try to protect the very thing that attracted the attack. Yes, can you see it? I actually will stand up and fight for an image I have of myself when it was the image that got shaken by the world that changed. And the world didn't come up and say to you, you know, today, guy, I'm going to ruin your image. Think for a second, will you? No one said today I'm going to do everything I can to sink how you think about yourself. We think someone's trying to sink us because we don't understand how attached we are to these ideas we have about ourselves. The difference between being a keeper and a conveyor is this. I said that we have to do something in a manner of speaking that's completely different. We need, as men and women, to understand, and it begins with that. This is why we're talking, you and I. We need to begin to understand the need for a new way to know ourselves. And when I say to understand the need for a new way to know ourselves, we have to go ahead and put the roadblock up there in front of us, because each time life seems to attack us and take from us what we're trying to keep, we do come up with a new way to know ourselves through a new plan, through the next project, through the next change that we envision for ourselves, where we will become someone who can't be hurt by someone else again, who can't go through what we went through, because we're gonna have a fort with a moat. Well, come on. So instead of reaching that point, which this is our work, this is a bit of spiritual work, really. I catch myself feeling attacked. I catch myself feeling I've lost something. He's this, she's that. And instead of allowing this mind that is the progenitor of the very process that I'm suffering from to tell me how to be free from my suffering, I recognize what it is. And if I actually see the fact of what I'm saying to you, then the mind, it's just like a blackjack dealer. Throwing out these cards, you know, three of diamonds, two of spades, each one a different idea, different plan. And the more you catch them, the more they think, well, try this. How about blackjack? You know, how about win? You'll win if you do this. And you understand that you mustn't be someone who becomes a keeper, because even to accept the new plan by how you will perfect this pain that you've not been free of, you've set yourself up for an attack. Haven't you? Do you see it? If I have a plan how to become a better person, and then something happens in life that argues with my plan, I'm attacked by my plan. I don't even get the thing yet. My plan is after me now. How many of you can have bad dreams? So the difference between being a keeper and being a conveyor. Here's what I'm using words now. A conveyor is an individual who understands that real life is an in-pouring moment. Real life is a quality of presence. It is an awareness of the fact that there is nothing in us to claim anything. Look, why do I want to be seen as someone? Let's say I want to be seen as someone. Why do you want what you want? Because I want to know who I am. We're hungry for that. There's a natural part of us. It's seeded into us, actually. Einstein said the central urge of every atom is to return to its source. We want to know who we are. But we've been given the wrong path for it, because we've been told that the way to know who we are is through things. And the way to know who we are is not through things. That's the way to wind up afraid. We've proven that. Then what does it mean to know ourselves as being a conveyor? It means that we do our part to be as present as we can all the time. And the thoughts, the feelings. Do we have time for this? I know it's warming, but take a deep breath. We'll be done in a few minutes. Here's a man. All of his friends have positions that are superior to his, but they know that he's a happier man than they are. And one day, one of the friends, which is difficult to do because no one who is seemingly superior wants to ask someone who's seemingly inferior, what's the secret of your happiness? Why do you love? I see it. He said, you every day you get up and I see you want to go to work. I see you want to live. Now, there's time when I want to live when things are going good, but there's time that I don't want to live when things are going bad. What is it about you? Because all you do, he said, is you sit there where those four rivers converge and you sit and turn dials to make sure that the basin doesn't get flooded. What is so fascinating about that? And he said, it's an endlessly creative job. He said, because none of the rivers are the same every day. They're always changing the quality of themselves, the color, the flow, the height. And each of them, as they flow in, affect the other. And it's the whole of them that I have to be attentive to, so that I make sure that nothing goes wrong with the movement of them, because that's my responsibility, not to control them, but to see that they fulfill what they're supposed to fulfill. This is what I'm talking about being a conveyor. We have a body, we have an emotional system, we have an intellectual system, and we belong to a broader system that fuels all of that, that animates, that gives it life. So here's all of these forces inside of a human being. Light and dark alike, I want to add that. Continually in a process of convergence, and guess where they converge? This is the miracle of all miracles. I don't know how in the world God did it. If I ever figure it out, I'll tell you. Me. They converge in me. They converge in you. the entire universe converges. Again, I don't know how the heck. Did you know that the center of the universe, wherever that center is found, is expanding equally? The center's everywhere. And you and I are the center. Our awareness is the participation in it. Being in the now means that I've begun to understand that the fulfillment of my life, I don't have to do a thing except be what I am, be present where I am. Because in that moment, here comes that, here, okay, how do I say this? Life does something and I don't like it. And the minute that life does something that I don't like, here's a river, isn't there? How many of you know the raging, the Red River? Life does something, here comes this river, rises up, doesn't it? Stormy waters, muddy. Now, what do you and I do as a rule when life doesn't, that river starts to do that? We leave the building. But because that's, we have to go find a new river. Rivers, we don't want to be around a river that does that. And wherever you go, there's the river. There's the rivers always meeting in us. Life pouring in. Life stimulating the contents of ourselves. And the thoughts and feelings that arise out of that stimulation that have become a part of our conditioned response to those movements. And that's one of the rivers. And all of that's going on. And you and I are sitting there trying to figure out how to keep everything in place. We don't have to keep it in place. It has its own place in us for its own reasons. Just like it takes care of life around us in its perfection, in its harmony. The difference between nature and human beings is that when we can really do what I'm talking to you about, we can't hurt each other. It's impossible. Nature doesn't have compassion in it. But human beings have an element in them that's part of that marvelous mix of the present moment that allows the man or the woman to look out and know exactly what that other human being is going through, what they're like, even what they need at a certain point. And out of that natural awareness of that convergence, that person knows what it takes. Not because he's come up with how to behave so that he can get something to keep, but as a natural movement of the whole of that life through himself, through herself. And such a human being isn't afraid anymore. Because there's nothing apart from the movement that's trying to keep anything for itself. Nothing. Do we understand this a little bit? So, because I'm going to stop now. That's what we're talking about. Learning to let go and live in the now is a work that we do right while I'm speaking to you. It's the work of catching inside of ourselves those thoughts that have for our whole life come up and said, you pay attention to me now. If you had a friend that said that to you, what would you do? You get lost, Buster. I don't work for you. There's actually a chapter in the book. You'll love this. One day, a negative thought, a negative feeling will come up inside of you, and because you're aware there at the gate, so to speak, because you're present to yourself, it'll come up inside of you, it'll start to tell you who you are, what you're supposed to do, how to get things fixed, and inwardly, the light will answer for you. It'll say, I don't work for you. I have a better boss. I have something else that I answer to. And little by little by little, as you learn to answer to this higher life that we're invited to enter into right now, the ache goes away, the fear goes away. And you discover the greatest thing that any man or woman on this planet will ever find out. And that is that when you're awake the way we're talking about, nothing bad can happen to you. Nothing. Everything becomes the food for a transformation that the individual, as he goes through it, exits the moment a different order of being that he was, just as the rivers, when they converge, come out something that they weren't prior to them, and the sum of the parts is greater than the whole. The whole, excuse me, is greater than the sum of the parts. This is what it means to be present to ourselves, and this is our work. So I hope that we've been able to communicate and understand some of these things, look at ourselves in a new way, to understand the need we have to start working to understand a new way. And if we've done that, we've done something good.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit guyfinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.